This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's time for the Klang Valley's biggest conversation, Talk Back on the Evening Edition, only on BFM 89.9.
It's Talk Back. I'm Ezra, and he's not Caroline. He's Umapagan Abike Pagan stepping in for Caroline O. Talk Back begins now. The number to call is 03-771-09000. Of course, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp or text us at 018-789-8899. Now, this month marks the 20th anniversary of the 1997 Asian financial crisis, and as we know, it was a crisis that took down currencies, stock markets regionally. There was government upheaval, ultimately throwing Asia into a deep recession.
Yeah, over here in Malaysia, it was pretty dramatic as well. We were going through both economic and political turmoil at the same time. The stock market, ringgit, property market nearly collapsed. And of course, all of this was happening while Anwar Ibrahim was being expelled from UMNO.
Yeah, it was a pretty dramatic and pretty awful time. Businesses were shuttering left and right, and it triggered anxiety about how bleak and uncertain the future looked, not just for our country, but of our livelihoods and the prospects of our kids.
So, you know, 20 years, it's been 20 years, we've survived, we've somewhat rebounded, but essentially we want to hear about what happened to you all those 20 years ago. How did the financial crisis impact you personally, financially, and how did you deal with it? So go on and call us on TalkBack and tell us how you were affected by the financial crisis of 1997.
Once again, the telephone number is 03-771-09000. You can text or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or also tweet us at BFM Radio. And, you know, I'm trying to sort of recall back some of my memories from 97, 98, and of course, you know, I was a teenager at the time, and I'm trying to think about some of the key moments as to how the financial crisis impacted my environment. I knew that at least in 97, my brother had just started his first year studying overseas, and there were some considerations that I would go along, but as a result of this financial crisis, I actually made you know, my parents think twice, triple times about, you know, maybe my brother should come back. Should I even go in the same year? Maybe we'll just postpone that to the next year. And I wasn't alone in that regard.
There were
so many families who were affected in such similar ways.
Yeah, in 97, I was just about to go. I just finished the SPM, my SPM year. I was about to go to university. And I think one of the direct impacts or implications of the financial crisis was that I had changed my plans and decided to go closer to home. So somewhere slightly more affordable, namely Australia, as opposed to the United States or the UK. Now, if you remember, Ezra, the US dollar was one US dollar to 2.5 ringgit at the time. Oh, crazy days. And then the British pound was 3.5 to the ringgit. And don't even get me started on the Singapore dollar, as in when it was, you know, then and where it is now. A lot has changed. And overnight, the currency collapsed. And, you know, the US dollar was hovering. I think it hit almost 5. The British pound hit 7. Mm-hmm. It was crazy.
And of course, call us at 03-771-09000. We want to hear your stories. What was it like 20 years ago? How did that impact you? And how difficult was it for you to almost restart your business and restart your life? Call us at 03-771-09000. Now, our first caller of the day is actually the big boss of BFM.
Our boss himself.
Malik, thank you very much for calling in. Tell us, how did the Asian financial crisis affect you personally?
Yep. So, 1997 Asian financial crisis, I was starting my first business. It was a newspaper classified business. The idea was to, you know, get classified advertising, which at the time was going to the normal traditional newspapers, to a very specialist magazine or a specialist newspaper that offers this. This business is very dependent on, you know, the property market being buoyant, the car market being buoyant. And guess what happened during the 1997 financial crisis? These markets just completely crashed. There was absolutely no transactions in the property market. There was no transactions in the car market. And people weren't hiring anyway. So in terms of recruitment, there were no job classifieds either. I remember the business plan just being shot to pieces because we were expecting maybe 30 or 40 pages of classified advertising. That went down to just pretty much less than half a page. So as you can tell, unfortunately, it was too late. We had already bought the equipment. You know, we bought the paper to print out this classified newspaper, and there was no turning back. So we tried it. We tried it for 1 year, but it was rough because there was absolutely no demand from advertisers to advertise in this newspaper. So how did the Asian financial crisis impact me? The short answer is it almost bankrupted me. Wow. That was how severe the impact of Asian financial crisis.
All right, boss, and could you tell us about what the mood was like? I mean, how did you feel?
I've never experienced a mood like that ever. So we're not just talking about the economic mood, right? So people will be let go of their jobs. People who were in any sort of business were affected by this. The ringgit was like, you know, sort of being completely punished by the markets, much more so than what we have went through right now. And to top it all off, I think during that time, we had one of the worst haze periods ever. So you wanted a bad mood? That was probably the confluence of just like all the stars were completely aligned in terms of the worst that could happen, happened. So environmentally, financially, business, the mood was just, a somber mood doesn't come close. It was truly depressing.
Malik, while going through this crisis, I'm just wondering for yourself and perhaps others around you, were you able to see the light at the end of the tunnel?
Not at all. We knew that when this happened, it was so severe that there was no light at the end of the tunnel. It was something that we just had to go through. It was, in a way, at least for my generation, it was, you know, we haven't seen something like this. Our parents had seen it. I remember my parents going through this in the mid-80s. I think the stock markets crashed, I think in 1985. They went through that, but this was my first experience of experiencing it personally. Was 1997.
Right. It's been 2 decades, of course, since the Asian financial crisis. Do you think this is something we'll see happening again anytime soon?
No. There will always be cycles. When I say no, what I mean is that I don't see it happening yet. With Malaysia's economy right now growing at 5%+, it's a very different scenario. But who knows, right? You might, if ever we go into a period of exuberance again, you know, where we set ourselves up for a big fall, that might happen in the future. I think every generation has to go through that. But we're not going through it right now, that's for sure. It's so far apart from what happened in 1997. But right now, I think we have a slightly different problem. The problem is death by a thousand cuts. It's not that one big fell swoop of the economy tanking or the markets tanking. What I call by death by a thousand cuts is that things like long-term stuff that I worry about, meaning, you know, our education system, are we producing the right kind of people that will lead Malaysia into the economies of the future? Death by a thousand cuts is our finances, public finances. Are we setting up structurally for good budgets going forward, meaning balanced budgets going forward? Is our pension liability really thought through, particularly in terms of public sector pension? These are the things which on its own might not impact us so much, but together, if we don't keep an eye on that, I think we're setting ourselves up for long-term failure.
Mali, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. That was Mali Ali, the Managing Director of BFM Media. And, you know, it's so sobering to hear, you know, his own personal experience, because to not be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, to describe it, to describe the current problem as a death by a thousand cuts. It was pretty severe, wasn't it?
That was what it was. It was an overnight unexpected, you know, just the year before. If you walk into any bookshop, you would just see dozens of books about the Asian tiger, the rise of the Asian tiger.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And all of that stuff. And that's the only thing everyone was talking about. And in many ways, it felt like almost punishment for our arrogance, right? We flew too close to the sun, mm-hmm. and we just took a dive in 97.
Yeah. And of course, you know, keeping in mind that, you know, the 1998 Commonwealth Games was coming up year after, and then of course we were hosting it.
The Queen was coming.
The eyes of the world were upon us, and we were going through all sorts of different considerations. And that's what we want to hear from you. Dial the memory bank back 20 years. Call us and tell us your respective stories of how difficult it was to overcome the Asian financial crisis of 1997. Call us at 03-77-10-9000. We've got a caller on the line, but we've got a quick word from our sponsors. Stay tuned to Talk Back on BFM 89.9.
Get in touch right now. Call 03-77-10-9000. Text 01620-19000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Talk Back on BFM 89.9.
It's Uma and Ezra on Top Back. The number to call is 0377-109000. We're talking about the 1997 Asian financial crisis. This month marks the 20th anniversary. We know that it was a crisis that took down currencies, stock markets, government upheaval. It was throwing Asia into a deep recession. We want to hear from you. How did the crisis impact you personally, financially, professionally? How did you deal with it? Once again, the number is 0377-109000. And now, Uma, our next caller, you know, we love her. She's a regular caller, and I think you love her a little bit more than I do. It's Mrs. Ampi. Mrs. Ampi, thanks for calling in.
Hi, guys.
You can hear from the horse's mouth as to how the financial crisis affected us.
Tell us, Mrs. Ampi.
Actually, as far as my training is concerned, they always say whenever there is a financial crisis, as a trainer, the first thing that goes is training. All organizations cut training, not realizing that during a financial crisis, you need to train your people. But our training dried up immediately.
How quickly?
People just rang up and said, cancel. Oof. And that's it. And we were making nothing less than 60,000-70,000 ringgit a month on training fees alone. And we were down to 5-0. Nothing. And I didn't want to sack anyone. I didn't want to let anybody go. So we worked with one fan. We cut down our electricity. We stopped using our rooms. We all gathered around one table. If somebody walked by and said that they wanted a trainer, we dragged him in and said, okay, how much can you pay? If he says 500, we would say, okay, 500, and we would give you. We took individuals. We did everything just to pay salaries. I know I didn't take. I told my partner, don't pay me. Pay the staff. If there was no money, there was no money. It was terrible. And my talk about money-back guarantees still works. There were some people who were still willing to pay, but they cut our fees down to 1,000 ringgit a day, 1,500. Wow. We took anything that came. And we worked our butts out. But the thing that affected our family was our daughter was doing medicine, and the exchange rate doubled.
And where was she doing medicine?
She was doing medicine in Ireland, and it was from 45,000 ringgit for 11,000 pounds was 90,000 ringgit, and the person who suffered was Uma. Because Uma was ready to go to college, we couldn't afford to send him to the U.S. to do his aerospace engineering. Maybe there was a bigger picture somewhere. And we had
maybe.
We had to send him to Australia.
But even that wasn't cheap.
Even that wasn't cheap.
Because the Australian exchange rate dived as well.
It too, but it was not bad. It was not compared to what U.S. and the sterling was. So it was terrible. It was really terrible. We felt so sad that Uma couldn't go to the U.S. to do his aerospace engineering, and he was sacrificed for the sake of my daughter finishing our exams. And you know, it was really terrible.
I still hold that over her till today.
Clearly, Mr. Lampy, was there anyone around you who, I guess, experienced the opposite of what you guys did? Did anyone around you or see a positive effect in any way, or was it just all negative around you?
I think basically, well, the people who were selling food managed. I think it was cheaper, but they managed. I think the doctors managed, because I think medicine is a little recession-proof. Not completely, but a little recession-proof. People always fell ill. And if you had an insurance, the insurance companies had to pay. So somewhere along the line, I think the doctors managed. But I know that, you know, my husband, his earnings definitely dropped for years. But I don't think anyone really made money.
Yeah.
You know, you don't make money out of people's misery. Mm. And that was hard. But I tell you, it was hard. But it was also an exciting time, because it suddenly made you think that you could do with so much less. You know, you could you had to cut down. You actually looked at brands and you looked at the price.
It would change your perception, wouldn't it?
Change your perception. Even now, I would. If you are very, very rich, you would never think of picking up something which was expensive, and you'd say, "Ah, that's okay." But you would. I would. If I was very rich, I wouldn't think three times about giving it to the valet parking. But now I would go and talk.
Yep. Yeah, and of course, Mrs. Nampi, you know, is one of those types of different, considerations that you make, in times where we're good and in times of bad, you start making different types of decisions.
Yeah, you don't have to go to extremely bad times either. I mean, look at today.
Yeah.
With the cost of living and the price of goods, even with our current exchange rate, it's not great. And we make these decisions every day. When we walk into a supermarket, we maybe wouldn't think twice 2 years ago mm-hmm. to buy a box of Kellogg's cornflakes.
Yeah.
Now that has doubled in price as well. It's like 40 ringgit a box. And you're like, nope, you know what? I'm going to settle for the no-brand cornflakes.
Mrs. Ampi, thank you very much for calling in and sharing your story. We're going to move on to our next caller. The number to call, once again, is 0377109000. You can WhatsApp us at 0187898999. Of course, tweet us at BFM Radio. Our next caller is Venny. Hi, Venny.
Hi, Ezra. Hi, Omar.
Hello.
Tell us your story.
Oh, mine is not so sober. In fact, it's pretty good. I got my independence. Meaning, because being an architect, that's the first field that gets every time affected badly.
Yeah.
So I was in Penang, and my boss got me shifted here for 2 months. To KL, meaning otherwise she couldn't keep all the stuff there. And I came here, and that 2 months actually earned me my independence. My father would have allowed me to come to KL otherwise. And I've stayed on since. It's been 20 years. So yeah, mine is not such a bad thing. It was, I don't remember. I remember, if I remember it back, it's about getting my independence and finally moving out of my family's home. So yeah.
Did you at least sense that, in that moment that there was a somber mood around you? Or for you, it was just clear skies?
I was enjoying my independence. I was like, yay! So, yeah.
But Vinny, I don't remember. You had independence but no money, lah.
Yeah, kind of. But then again, I never needed much to go along, so I'm one of those. So, okay, I was okay. I came here, but we were given lodging free for the first 2 months. And she asked if I wanted to stay on, and I enjoyed it too much being on my own. I figured, okay, what the heck, But after that, I thought I needed to rent, and that's when the pinch came in. So I kind of felt it, but, it was so, yeah.
And Vinny, of course, we're celebrating, I guess, the 20th anniversary of the Asian financial crisis.
Maybe not celebrating.
Not celebrating.
Commemorating.
Commemorating is probably the right word. But, given how we're in 2017, how do you feel the economy is doing now? Are you optimistic? With cost of living and a whole host of other things going up, how are you managing it?
I'm okay. I'm normally a very optimistic person anyway, so it doesn't really, whatever bad comes from it, I keep telling myself someone else has worse, so that sort of helps me move forward. So it didn't hit me, like I said, I go with the flow. If it's bad, I know how to tone down, I know not to, what not to do. So it's never really affected me. Money, I've never had much, so I'm not, and I've always managed well with whatever I have. So yeah, it doesn't. I'm one of those, I guess, lucky in that sense.
Thank you very much for calling in, Venny. I mean, that's very nice. Two callers in, we had somebody who, found a different way to experience 1997, and certainly she got her independence in that year.
Yeah, we got a message from a listener. It's a rather sad story. He says his father lost his job as a salesman, couldn't afford mortgage, and had to borrow from loan sharks to sustain daily life. A loaf of bread would sustain a family of five for 3 days, where my parents sometimes skip meals. Luxury food was rice with egg or prawn crackers. Eventually, we lost our home and had to move out. However, my late father was a fighter and took him around 8 years to stabilize his income as a self-employed person in the end. He says he was only five, but he remembers these as clearly as it were yesterday.
Well, there you go. It's been 20 years since the Asian financial crisis. We want to hear your stories. What happened in those 20 years? How did the financial crisis impact you personally, financially, professionally? We want to hear how you dealt with it. Hopefully, there are some lessons for us, in today's context as well. Albeit it's not as bad, but there are different sort of considerations. At play. Moving on to our next caller. If you want to call in at 0377109000, you can do so on TalkBack. May is on the line. Hi, May.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
So, tell us, May, how did it affect you?
At that time, I was working in an insurance loss adjusting company where we represent insurance companies. To adjust claims, yeah. I didn't feel any impact because we were still getting our bonuses and increments. Even though we heard about many people, friends and people that we know getting pay cuts or losing their jobs. I guess our industry, at that time at least, we were insulated from what was going on because claims were still coming in, to the insurance company.
Mm.
Our clients who were our clients and claims were still coming in and burglary claims, staff, misappropriating money. I guess even during those times when economy wasn't doing well, you tend to get more of those claims. So we were seeing more cases coming in.
And May, what about you personally and your family and those around you?
I think at that time my brother was still studying, so he was studying locally, so we didn't feel the impact very much.
Okay, yeah, I think that would be the biggest impact, right? For a lot of people who actually had children who were studying overseas,
yeah.
We got to remember, like in the 90s, there was the thing to do. I mean, because the currency was so good, Malaysia was doing so well economically, sending your kid overseas, if you were of a middle class background, wasn't something that was too hard to do. In
yeah.
today's day and age, you can be classified as middle class and still not be anywhere close to afford to send your kid overseas. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, when we talk about the Asian financial crisis, we're talking about, in the context of Malaysia, but regionally as well. I mean, Thailand, as an example.
And Indonesia.
Yeah, just hit in such big ways. And as a result, you could see the effects towards the political and social structures in those countries as well.
And of course, they took very different approaches to Malaysia. A couple of years ago, Tun Dr. Mahathir came to speak at the Kuala Lumpur Festival on his most dangerous idea.
Yeah.
And he said at the time that his most dangerous idea was to not accept IMF help for Malaysia and to peg the ringgit against the dollar, which everyone called stupid at the time, and it turned out to be probably the smartest thing.
Yeah, folks, it's TalkBack. We're asking you whether you were affected by the financial crisis of 1997. This month marks the 20th anniversary of that. We know that it was such a crisis that took down currency, stock markets. There was government upheaval. We want to hear your stories. What happened in those 20 years? How did the financial crisis impact you personally, financially, and professionally? The number to call is 0377109000. Tweet us at BFM Radio and you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Now, I know we've got a few callers waiting on the line right now, but the 6:30 news with Azlin Balkis will be coming up right after this. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Hey, you. Yes, you. You in the car. Yes, 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 you. I'm talking to you. It's time for TalkBack. So, hands-free car kits at the ready? Yes? Good. Let's talk back on BFM 89.9.
It's Talk Back with Uma and Ezra. We're commemorating the 20th anniversary of the Asian financial crisis. This month marks the 20th anniversary. And of course, things here in Malaysia were pretty dramatic. We were going through both economic and political turmoil at the same time. The stock market, the ringgit, and the property market nearly collapsed. We want to hear how you guys dealt with it. We want to hear your stories. How did the financial crisis impact impact you. The number to call is 03-771-09000. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Right, a message from a listener in the 1970 AFC, Asian Financial Crisis. I had to take up two jobs in Australia to supplement tuition and living expenses. Meanwhile, some of my mates had to stop their courses altogether. That's a pretty standard, I guess, story that we're hearing from a lot of people. Another listener says, all the stock prices were at rock bottom, but I had no guts to invest at the time. Fear ruled my life at the moment.
Now, moving on to our next caller, Melvin has been holding the line very patiently. Now, Melvin, thanks for calling in. And I understand that you went overseas to study, but due to the circumstances, you had to come back. Melvin, are you there? Melvin, are you there? Unfortunately, Melvin's not there. Do try. Call us back at 03-771-09000. We're moving on to our next caller. Arman is on the line. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks for calling in. Tell us your story.
Well, I'm 55 and I was in the stockbroking industry.
Oh, okay.
For a long time, wow. For about 25 years. And 1997 was one wonderful year. because we made a lot of money.
Ooh, tell us more.
Yeah, because when people sell their shares, we have brokerages to gain.
Of course.
Right, and that's where our income was. On top of that, we had wind that the markets are going to fall, so that so many other instruments are going to fall, and so we shot the market.
Right,
And so, Arman, I guess, you know, given that you got wind of what was to come, could you make those relevant decisions in time to benefit from it?
Yes. It's like information that you know that banks are getting into trouble, people are getting, a little bit panicky, and naturally there are some people who are going to make money out of this. Not everything that sounds bad is bad, you know.
And did the gravy train, continue right throughout 97 into 98, or did it sort of peter out at some point in time?
Yeah, it quietened down after 98, but it was stabilized and things like that. I'm trying to say 97 was exposed. It's fantastic. Everything's happening. You're in the market, and people are crazily selling their shares, not even looking at whatever prices. They just sell it off. And when they sell, they gain the brokerages. But before they do that, we have resold our positions first. Yeah. And what happens is that when they start selling, the prices keep on coming down. Once it comes to a certain level, we start to buy back the position. Once I buy back the position, I've already done a transaction, a sell and a buy. So that's where you make your money, because the prices have come down. It goes opposite when the market is going to go up. You buy first, then you sell on the higher price.
And Arman, I imagine, with the conversations that you might have been having with friends and relatives, they might have been asking you how you were,
riding it out.
Yeah.
Well, everybody wanted to call me. My phone's never stopped ringing.
So, Arman, tell me this. After 97, when was the last time the markets were that exciting?
Whenever the market falls or whenever there's an economic problem to a country, the stock market is the first to react. And when that happens, we as brokers, we get, maybe not first-hand news, but at least second-hand news, and that's enough for us to act. So we make the decision whether to sell when the market is coming down, then buy back later, or when the market is going up, we buy first and then sell a little later. And both ways, we make money.
All right, terrific. Arman, thank you very much for calling in. And, these are some real stories that we're hearing. We've had a variety of callers, some with positive and some with negative effects of the financial crisis. We're going to move on to our next caller. If you want to call in, 03-771-09000. We're asking you, were you affected by the 1997 Asian financial crisis? Victor is on the line. Hi, Victor.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening, Victor.
Yeah, what I remember about 1997 is I paid through my nose on some of my bank installment because one of the loan, I think the interest go even to this 16% per annum, which is
wow,
which is too much. But I think the lesson from this 1997 financial crisis is don't ever believe in the government is all powerful. I mean, government is also affected by. The second thing is, if you think now the time is bad, it's good to think about worse time so that you don't feel so bad after all.
Yeah, that's exactly why we're doing this right now. We're trying to give people a reminder of what it was like back in 97, 20 years ago, right?
Victor, thank you very much for calling in. Once again, the number to call is 03-771-09000. We want to hear your stories about how you survived the Asian financial crisis of 1997. How were you affected? Our next caller is Sue. Sue, tell us, how did it work with you and your family, with your job at the time? How did it affect you?
At that time, the mortgage loan and also car loan, the interest is very, very high.
Yeah.
Because that time, they follow the normal economy plan, whereby they need to increase the interest in order to attract foreign investment or foreign money coming in. So, basically, me and my wife was actually working for a developer company.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have to move out. I have to resign from the developer company and go into healthcare, because basically we cannot both stay in the same sector. If we stay at the same sector, then we will be in trouble.
You were trying to hedge your bets, I guess, in different areas.
Right. So when I joined the healthcare center, I actually do not have a problem with my salary and other things, staying on time and everything. But my wife is working for a developer company. They have pay cuts, they have no salary, sometimes 2 months they don't pay.
Wow.
Wow. So, fortunately, I actually make a decision to change, and the impact was not so bad.
And of course, looking back at that particular time, was it so? I mean, did you feel that you were always going to ride it out? That there was a light at the end of the tunnel? Did you have family and friends who were going through much more difficult times as well?
A lot of my friends and relatives also having a lot of problems. Basically, especially not being paid on time. A lot of cash flow problems from companies because they find the US dollars keep going up and they couldn't, also they couldn't pay for their loan. Especially those who are having OD, a company having OD and things like that. They don't pay their stuff on time.
Yeah.
So that is the insecurity. Basically, I can see, well, we don't starve to death, okay? But basically, everybody has to tie their spending, and they have to go on the very extreme saving. That means not spending too much.
Yeah. Sue, thank you very much for calling in, and we're moving on to our next caller. Melvin is on the line. Hi, Melvin.
Hi.
Hi, you can hear us now. Terrific. Tell us, you know, you went overseas to study, and from what I understand, you had to come back. Is that right?
Yes, actually, I went on 97, so my parents had enough funds, so I went to Liverpool. So that was 97, then the crisis came. So so my parents assured me that, you know, just continue to study. And then I thought there's something not right, so I decided to come back anyway because continue to see the pound. The time was about close to
7,
8 ringgit to
8
a pound.
Ringgit, yes.
So, yeah, it went up to about 8 ringgit to a pound. So I came back, and then there I got to find out that actually my dad actually lost his job. So he was laid off. Yeah. So, but anyway, it was a good decision that I came back. Then couldn't really continue, but thank God that time government started to have a local private university. So I went to enroll myself in MMU. So continue study from there. It didn't turn out too bad. That's where I actually got to meet my wife.
Oh, nice.
So, but we did weather through, and it's pretty tough during those times. And I graduated back in 2001. Couldn't really find a job because we just really came up from the crisis.
And did your father rebound professionally?
Yeah, he did because he's an experienced guy in his field. So he managed to find another job. So we continue on. So considered it, go through it.
Melvin, thank you very much for calling in and sharing and sharing your story with us. It's nice that sometimes there are some silver linings.
There were
different
plans, right?
Yeah.
Met his wife. That's a great little moment. I guess a great little moment of happiness to come out from such tragedy, right? I mean, a lot of people, Malaysia wasn't as hit. The previous caller said something interesting. We weren't starving, he said. And I think Malaysia was hit badly, but probably our neighbors, Thailand and Indonesia, were hit even worse.
Yeah, and then the desperation and the social desperation increases a much greater level as well.
Yes, of course, because remember the political turmoil that happened in... I mean, we had a slight political turmoil compared to what was going on in Indonesia, right? Riots and protests in the streets. But what's interesting, of course, was, you know, we mentioned that we were coming off this extreme high. It was like Southeast Asia and Asia could do no wrong. I mean, we were all rich and prosperous and happy, and then suddenly that dive was just so much to handle.
Folks, it's Top Back. We're talking about the 20th anniversary of the Asian financial crisis. We've got another 15 minutes to go, but we'll be right back after these messages on BFM 89.9.
03-7710-9000 to Talk Back. BFM 89.9.
It's Uma and Ezra on Top Bat. The number to call is 03-7710-9000. As mentioned, this month marks the 20th anniversary of the 1997 Asian financial crisis, and things here were pretty dramatic. We wanted to hear from you as to how you guys dealt with that particular crisis. How did it impact you and your family and your loved ones, personally, professionally, financially as well? We have on the line right now Thiam Hawk, and of course our notes here tell us that, Timo, you had a cosmetic business when the crisis happened. Could you tell us a little bit more?
We started a cosmetic business back in 96, and we were mainly importing products from France, from, you know, all over the place. And that time, the exchange rate, US dollars, mostly buying US dollars or French francs. US dollar was 2.5 ringgit. And then the contagion started from Thailand. And it just went from 2.5. And at breathtaking speed, it went up to all the way to 4.8, right? In 6 months or a year, I think. We were stuck because those products that we brought in was on 120 days credit. By the time we sell, and then by the time we had to pay the bill to the bank, it has gone double, you know, the cost has gone double. So if you have bought and sell, you have lost money. After that, we got frightened and then we stopped buying. And when you don't sell, you have nothing to sell. And there's no business. You also lose money. So I nearly went under, you know, had to borrow money from my partners to pay back the bank bills and stuff like that, you know, just to stay alive.
Right, so when the business wasn't going so well, how did you talk about it with your family?
Our family is still smaller, so my wife was with me in the same business. So we were both totally aware of what's happening. Luckily, I had a financially strong partner that I could borrow money from him personally to just, you know, loan it and into the company and pay back the banks. The key was always the banks, because you're buying products on LCs, and then you bring the products in, and then you pay the bank 120 days later. In the meantime, you have sold your products, right, at the, what you thought was the original cost. But then the US dollar has gone up, and then, you know, in 4 months' time, you're paying double, you know, what you're paying, 30% more, 50% more, double, that kind of stuff. So you were losing for every piece you sold, right, you would have been losing money. And then I still had to, I can't remember, I was I had 38 staff, so nearly went under.
And I guess, you know, in talking about your staff, did you have to have those conversations with them on how poorly the business was doing? That couldn't have been easy.
I think the staff generally, they could see, you know, that there were hardly any sales, right? Sometimes you don't have enough products, or, you know, those days the orders were coming in, purchase orders were coming in by fax machine. So you can hear, practically hear if there's any order coming in, because the fax machine was quiet throughout the day. So the staff was totally aware of it. You know, we still pay their salaries. We did have a conversation where at that time, I think after 6 months or 9 months, it was really bad. And then I look at it, I said, I tell the staff we have enough cash until for the next 3 months or so, right? If we still continue, because it went all the way to 4.8, and there was this joke about George Soros telling Mahathir, meet you at 5. So I was telling the staff and even my partner, I said, by October, if we still maintain this kind of rate, I don't think we can survive. So we cut our losses and just close down the operation and just retrench everybody, you know. But in October, to Mahathir, or at that time, Dr. Mahathir, at that time, he came in with this control rate of 3.8, right? He fixed the exchange rate at 3.8 yeah. US dollars. And that's where we could just restart the business.
Well, Tim Hawk, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that with us. Uma, you know, it reminded me about how business was done back in the day, how technology and how people communicate.
I love the story about the fax machine.
And it's the fax machines, right? You know, that facsimile paper, that the print on the paper was just never as satisfying as a photocopy.
But also, you know something's happening when you hear the krrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr
silence for, you know, on a Monday and a Tuesday and a Wednesday, and that continues, morale in the office certainly can change.
There's no email. There's none of that stuff. And also, I mean, it's an interesting impact that that 3.8 peg had a huge impact. I mean, there's $1.20 less than what it could have been. And that would be a savior for a lot of businesses.
And even though it's been 20 years, you know, and we've since officially recovered, it seems that our improved economic standing has done little to offset the lethargy that a lot of Malaysians are feeling. Last week, there was this op-ed that's been shared around on social media quite a bit. It was published in the South China Morning Post, and it was written by Karim Razlan. And he wrote about a deficit of optimism that's currently pervading the Malaysian mindset. Now, despite the currency rebound, Malaysians are struggling with rising prices, new taxes, a stuttering economy, and an unending series of political scandals, and it's making us rather unhappy. Karim joined us on the line to elaborate.
Yes, the Malaysian economy has seen a lot of growth, but the growth has been extremely uneven. It's been lopsided. There are many sections of the community that haven't prospered at all from this growth. At the same time, the environmental impact of a lot of this growth has been felt by everybody, namely the negative environmental impact. And also the fact that many who've prospered are those who are politically connected, etc., means that you leave a lot of people very resentful.
Now, in explaining more about this optimism deficit, Karim alludes to the idea that Malaysians in the past felt that things would and could get better, but today there is a sense that this may not be the case.
When it comes to optimism, we have to be frank. Back in the late 1980s with Operation Lalang, that was a brutal stroke delivered by Dr. Mahathir, no less, that really undermined that sense of optimism of the 80s. Likewise, the financial crisis and the showdown between Dr. Mahathir and Anwar also had the same impact on the mood in Malaysia in the late 1990s. However, let's be frank, there was still a sense of optimism, especially when Abdullah Badawi came into power in 2003, and the sense that things would open up, the media would open up, there would be more accountability. But that, as we all know, was not to last. I think now, having lived through one, two, three kind of economic downturns and the political tensions linked to that, people have lost that sense of optimism. At the same time, the march of the religious institutions, specifically the Islamic ones, and the way that they are dominating public and now private discourse and public and private lives is also getting very worrying, especially for those who are on the progressive side of the Malay-Muslim divide.
And looking towards the future, Karim Razlan talked about returning to a respect for education, knowledge, and professionalism.
Well, I think it's all about respect for the individual. Part of the big problem of the current political discourse, of the UMNO PAS discourse, and let's face it, UMNO and PAS seem to be heading towards an alliance, is that it's not about the individual. There are appeals to the ummah, to the community, to the Malay Muslim community. So it rules out the world and the hard work of those who are talented, those who seek to do things in an ethical and proper way. The most important thing in this world and in this ethos is loyalty, taat setia kepada pemimpin, and a refusal to accept differing opinions. And I think until and unless we learn to respect the many very different opinions within the broad spectrum of Malaysia, not just Malaysia, actually, the very broad spectrum of views and opinions of all Malay Muslims as well, I suspect this optimism deficit will continue.
That was writer Karim Razlan, also the founder and CEO of KRA Group. And, you know, just taking into context that article and reflecting on the past 20 years, especially with the Asian financial crisis, there is a sense of deja vu, but with a different kind of spin on the end of it as well.
It seems like a standard place to be in as you progress as a society and as an economy, right? To have this optimism deficit. In most developed nations in the world, the public are generally pessimistic and untrustworthy of the government and authorities.
Yeah.
And I think that seems like a normal situation, if only because, you know, in the early days of any society, it's very easy to win, I guess, the trust of the people because you're giving them what they want. Oh, if we don't have roads, let's build some roads. You don't have water and electricity? Here you go, water and electricity. But, you know, we've, with the exception of certain places in the East Coast and on East Malaysia, I would say that the general infrastructure, the goals, the big engineering, physical, tangible goals have been achieved.
Yep.
It's the intangible goals now that we're upset about as people. It's like, oh, you know, now we can talk about, let's talk about human rights. Let's talk about all of these other things that upset us. Freedom of religion, equality of religion, all of these things.
Because
right?
those achievements of the hardware, by and large, as you mentioned, it's been achieved, but there is a and disconnect also, and dissatisfaction with how it relates to our existing software.
And
right?
also, it feels like you can achieve it. It feels like it's easier to achieve the hardware things because it requires money and skill and the ability to build something with your hands, and you can do it. But the software seems like there's just too much conflict that it's not something that can easily be resolved.
Yeah. Well, folks, we've been talking about the 20th anniversary of the Asian financial crisis. Thank you very much for all your calls, texts, and tweets. And, of course, the evening edition continues right after the 7 o'clock news. I'll be speaking to Joe Siddit, the festival director, about the Rainforest Fringe Festival. I took a trip just this past weekend. That's right, just to find out what was happening there. And, of course, it's a 10-day festival that aims to exhibit the indigenous culture of present-day Sarawak through local talents in music, fashion, food, and film. And of course, it leads up to the big 20th anniversary event of the Rainforest World Music Festival as well.
Right.
So after this, I'll be speaking to Joe Siddik about Kuching, Sarawak, and everything related to the Rainforest Fringe Festival. That's coming up after this. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.